Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. On yesterday's podcast, we talked about examples of bad parenting, examples of when parents use more authoritarian techniques, punishment, and the like to manage children's behaviors. And so today we're going to talk about a shift in perspective that will hopefully encourage you to shift away from authoritarian parenting and that, you know, because I said so types of things, to more of an authoritative, collaborative type of parenting.
You know, you use the term bad parenting, and whenever we hear the term bad parenting, most of us shift to permissive parenting, you know, that you're being too permissive.
Right.
But bad parenting can also be authoritarian parenting.
Right.
And that's what we talked about yesterday with cutting kids' hair and punish mm-hmm. them publicly and humiliating them in public. Those are errors of commission, you know. And so today what we want, and so today we're going to move, sort of keeping in those thoughts in mind, the directions we went yesterday, keeping those in mind. Today we want to talk about how to put on a different set of lenses to take a very different perspective.
Right.
We have a short article today that mentions Ross Green.
Right.
There was another that you and I have used in the past. It's a much longer sort of academic approach to this. But we decided to send this shorter, sort of condensed version. Same kinds of ideas, but a little more user-friendly, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk about this idea of collaborative, and more specifically, shifting your perspective from looking at children's behavior as intentional and deliberate and overt, you know, that they're doing it on purpose.
Purpose of behavior,
right?
You know, is because so many parents see these behaviors as purposive or purposeful, that kids are trying to accomplish something.
Right.
That may not be the case.
They even say that, you know, he's doing it just to make me mad.
Right, that's right.
And you sit there and scratch your head and think, what would be the benefit of making you mad?
Think about that for a minute. You know, what's the advantage of making you mad?
I mean,
when was that ever an advantage?
Right. You know?
And it wasn't. So,
Especially if you're an authoritarian parent and you're using punishment and this kind of thing. Why would he want to make you mad? It just doesn't make sense.
Think of a five-year-old saying, I have a good idea.
Yeah. What?
I'm going to go make my dad angry so he'll hit me in the head.
Yeah. That would be great.
That's
a good Saturday morning.
That's right. I feel like spending time in my room today in time out, so
right.
I know how I'm going to accomplish. Kids just don't think that way.
Right. So instead of thinking that way, we need to shift and start thinking about, you know, what we would just refer to as lagging skills or skill deficits.
That's right.
You know, it very well could be, and is likely the case, that kids aren't able to do the things that we want them to do.
That's right.
Now, I already know what you're thinking. You're already thinking that, well, yes, he can do them because he does them sometimes, and then there's other times when he doesn't do them.
That's since the 70s, since B.F. Skinner first became really popular back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And you would frequently hear people say, well, I know that he can do it because he did. What Skinner was talking about is, can an organism demonstrate a behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Just because an organism is physiologically capable of doing a behavior doesn't mean the organism will do the behavior.
Right.
Whether it's the organism is a rabbit or a rat or a dog or a person.
Right.
Just because a person can doesn't mean that they will demonstrate, is physiologically capable, that they will demonstrate that behavior on a consistent basis when you want them to.
Right.
Okay.
And this is something that, you know, I've had to testify in court about, I've had to, you know, I've certainly talked to a lot of parents about, there's a big difference between being able to perform a behavior and knowing when and where and how to engage in that behavior in daily life.
When to use it.
Right.
Right. I think of language, you know, we talk about you know, you have the ability to speak, and you can speak to another person, but there's this concept of pragmatic language. Mm-hmm. Do you use it in the proper setting?
Right.
Do you use it in the proper context? That's verbal behavior. Well, all behavior is that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course you can speak, but do you know how to use language effectively in a
right.
in a social setting? And
right.
you may not have that skill.
Right. Mm-hmm. And a very simple example that most of you listening would be able to recognize is speaking, right?
Right?
You can all speak. You can talk. You can express
yourself. You have the physiological capability of making speech.
All right. Now, let's put you in front of a microphone on a podium in front
right.
of 500 people.
Perfect.
How well will you do there?
Mm-hmm.
Many people are unable to formulate a coherent sentence,
right.
and that because of anxiety, because of a lot of different things. But that's exactly the case that we're talking about with kids in these kinds of situations. You can do the behavior, but depending on the situation, you may or may not be able to perform it at that time.
That's really a good example, because you can say, well, no, I heard him speak. I know he can talk because he talked this morning.
Right.
Yeah, but so he should be able to talk in front of 500 people and do an effective speech.
Should be able to.
No. Two different skill sets.
Right.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. And so when you're talking about your kid being organized or inhibiting impulses or doing some of these other
right.
things that kids often get in trouble for,
mm-hmm.
we have to look at the situation. I was talking to a family the other day, and they have a kindergartner. And
right.
the kindergartner gets in trouble at school because he wants to talk and interact and engage with
mm-hmm.
his friends.
Right.
And so the parents will sit down and they'll talk with him all the way to school. And what are we going to do when we're going to sit quietly?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to interrupt and talk to our neighbors? No, we're not. No, I don't do that. I'll get in trouble. But as soon as the kid gets into the school and he's in this classroom and he starts talking to his friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, before class starts, now all of a sudden he's in an environment where, hey, this is fun.
Right.
I enjoy talking with my friends and we enjoy playing. I don't want to sit down at my desk.
Right.
He's not even thinking about your conversation anymore.
Conversation, yeah.
Because
right.
he's in an environment where it's far more stimulating
mm-hmm.
to be talking and interacting and playing.
That's right. He can do it in the car.
Right.
But he can't do it in the classroom.
And he knows he's supposed to do it in the classroom,
right.
but just knowing that he's supposed to doesn't mean that he's capable
Isn't
of it.
Isn't sufficient.
Right.
right.
He's going to need direction. He's going to need encouragement. He's going to need reminders. He's going to need all of those things,
mm-hmm.
not because he's a bad kid,
right.
or not because he's intentionally trying to upset someone,
mm-hmm.
and not because he's trying to break the rules.
And he's not. And he's not being disrespectful or defiant.
Right.
I mean that's so often, parents and teachers leap to that conclusion
mm-hmm.
that this is defiance. I've told him not to do it. He's doing it anyway. This is defiance.
Right.
And you treat it as defiance when actually it's a skill deficit.
Right.
And much of this article is devoted to the work of Ross Greene.
Right.
In fact, the subtitle is Collaborative Problem Solving.
Right.
And Ross Greene's famous saying that you and I use all the time,
right.
if kids can, they will.
Right.
If he can, he will. If she can, she will. And he sees, clearly he sees it as a skill deficit,
right.
not defiance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things that's quoted in this article that we really like
mm-hmm.
is he says that, and I'm going to quote from it here, as few as two or three unsolved problems, meaning skill deficits,
right.
as few as two or three unsolved problems can account for 70% to 80% of their challenging episodes.
That's right, and that's absolutely, I had never thought about it in those
mm-hmm.
numerically like that before, but it's true. If you lack this skill, it's going to play itself out across settings,
right.
and it's going to look like the child is being defiant multiple times when actually the child is lacking this skill and doesn't apply it in these various settings.
Exactly. So take the simple thought of impulsivity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the child lacks the skill of inhibition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. So think about all the ways in which that's going to manifest.
Over the course
talking,
of a day. Right.
In touching other people, in
mm-hmm.
getting out of a seat. All of those things are rooted in impulsivity.
Right.
And so
right.
that one lagging skill is going to cause a lot
mm-hmm.
of disruptive behaviors.
Another one of the lagging skills is the inability to transition
right.
quickly from one activity to another.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think of the from the time a child gets out of bed or is awakened in the morning until they go to sleep, think of all the opportunities where a child is asked to transition from one activity to another. Mm-hmm. It's not that they hate taking a bath or they hate getting dressed or they hate having breakfast. They just don't transition well from one activity to another. And by teaching a child how to transition, mm-hmm. you solve multiple, what look like multiple behavior problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we strongly, very strongly, this is what we write about in our book, and mm-hmm. we often share with families that we work with. We encourage you to shift that perspective. They're not intentionally being bad. I think that we've said this multiple times, but you know, I can count on one hand, I think. I've been working with families and children since the mid to late 90s, and mm-hmm. you much longer than that.
No, three or four years. That's not much longer. Did I leave a zero?
I think so.
Okay.
But we've been doing this for a long time, and we can count on one hand the number of kids who you could probably say, he kind of wants. He's looking for something with some of these bad behaviors.
I was thinking about that because there are children and adults. There are children who do challenge you,
mm-hmm.
or they seem to challenge you. They're going to just be defiant.
Right.
I guess they do exist, mm-hmm. but I would say there are very few of them.
Right.
Okay. Number one.
Right.
I mean, I think there's you can count them on one hand. The dozens or hundreds of kids that we've seen,
right.
who are simply trying to misbehave,
right?
I mean, it's possible,
right? Right.
But there are so few. It's like this thing about, you know, if it looks like a horse and all that stuff, mm-hmm. it's probably a horse mm-hmm. and not a zebra, because
right.
there's a better likelihood that it's a horse instead of a zebra,
right?
And that's the way it is with this.
Yeah.
Chances are it's a skill deficit.
Right.
There's always the possibility, and I think I have. I've been doing this for just a few years longer than you have,
mm-hmm.
a couple years. We count patients. We've probably seen thousands now, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just doing the math, because we see a couple hundred
a month.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So over the course of more years than I can count, there are maybe two or three kids that mm-hmm. I would say fall into that category.
Right.
I mean, we're not talking about three kids out of 100. We're talking about three kids out of thousands of kids that we've seen who have that, who are displaying behaviors that just don't make any sense. It's
mm-hmm.
not a skill deficit.
Right.
But we're only talking about a handful of people.
Right. Right.
I mean, in the whole country. So chances are it is a skill deficit.
Right, right. And the reality, too, is that even if it's intentional, even if it's one of the two or three,
right.
There is no harm done by initially treating it as a skill deficit.
You still have to teach them the skill.
Right.
It is still a skill deficit.
Right.
There may be another component to it, but
right.
it's still a skill deficit.
So bringing this approach is going to be useful no matter what the problem, whether it's a skill deficit, or it's one of the, you know, tenth of a percent.
One of those
there's
a handful
that,
of kids
that are really problematic.
And I can think of one. You and I have talked about him many, many times. That it's really there's something else
right.
going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's clearly it doesn't fall into this category. But there are so few
mm-hmm.
that I don't think you need to worry about it.
Right.
And so it's probably a skill deficit.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about collaborative problem solving at all
today,
or do that another time?
We could do that today or tomorrow for tomorrow.
Well, one of the things we like about this approach, the other thing we like about it, because we're going to talk about it a little bit today, but more tomorrow, is something that Ross Green calls collaborative problem solving.
Right, we mentioned it the other day, yeah.
Right, as the name implies, you're bringing the child into the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And for children older than 5 or 6 who have typical language skills,
mm-hmm.
age-appropriate language skills, What I like about the approach of teaching a skill is that it's much easier to bring the child into the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Parents and teachers don't have to generate all the interventions.
Right.
Sometimes you can sit down with the child and say, okay, this is what you're doing now mm-hmm. that we disapprove of or that you can't do anymore. Can you think of some other way to accomplish this?
Right.
Okay. And let the child generate, because then it's their solution, it's their intervention, and they'll be invested in it.
Right. Okay.
So thinking of these things as skill deficits allow you to bring the child into the intervention. Mm-hmm. If you think of it as defiance, then you have to dole out a punishment.
Right.
Okay.
Then it becomes more adversarial.
That's right. And then you have an adversarial relationship rather than a collaborative relationship. Right. And you want a collaborative relationship because throughout the child's life, you want to be able to do collaborative problem solving.
Right.
And as the child gets older, even more so.
Right.
And that's that whole notion of you want to do detachment parenting. Well, you have to teach the child to solve his or her own problems.
Right.
This gives you the opportunity when they're 5 or 6 years old to begin that process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and we will talk a bit more about it tomorrow, because tomorrow we're going to talk about the importance of teaching rather than punishing. And so we're going to kind of bridge from here into, all right, so how do we do some of that?
Right.
All right.
How do we get there?
Yeah. So,
okay.
All right. Then that's it.
I'm going to overlook that comment about the difference in years.
Yeah, it's all right. You don't have to overlook it.
You were, that was
a few more years than I've been alive.
Speaking of impulse control.
That's right. Yeah, just snuck right
out. Just slipped out. Didn't mean it.
This Saturday, the podcast that's going to go out is the last of our individual interviews from our trip to the Philippines. And we're going to be introducing some new music and graphics and some of that.
That's right. That's
stuff.
This Saturday.
So
right.
We would love to hear from you. We're just kind of priming the pump here a little bit. We'd love to hear from you what you think about the new music, what you think about the new graphic. It's very short, very simple, very clean, but very nice.
Yeah,
I hope.
Developed by a wonderful young woman who is enthused about this as much as we are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, we're really
excited.
Let
us know what you think about that.
Exactly. So, all right, that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.